This podcast contains sensitive topics such as murder, violence, and sexual abuse.
Last week on Listen Carefully, we asked our audience members to send us their personal theories. Here are a few submissions about the intruder theory.
I think someone went through the broken window in the basement.
I always used to think the parents did it, but now I think it's the intruder theory.
Lately, I've been leaning more towards the intruder theory.
I 100% think it was an intruder who snuck into their house while they were at the Christmas party.
100% an intruder, no question.
No one can convince me that it wasn't an intruder.
I think it was a pedophile from one of the pageants that broke into our house.
All right, welcome everyone to a very special episode. We are finally getting into the theories, and I'm pretty psyched about it.
It's a special on Saturday.
Oh yeah, because I forgot to say it's Saturday, everyone.
Yes, welcome to our Saturday special.
I did think it was Wednesday earlier, so I'm glad that we clarified that. So happy Saturday, everyone. We're very excited to do this episode. We're going to cover the intruder theory.
Intruder theory.
Yeah. Yes. So before we get started on this, we want to kind of talk about where the intruder theory came from. And the biggest source is from Lou Smith. And before we truly dive in, it's important to understand that, you know, Lou Smith wasn't an original investigator on the case.
He was not the lead detective on the case either. No. He wasn't even a detective or police officer at the Boulder Police Department or even at the time that he started working on this case.
Right. He was brought in by the DA, and we'll discuss a little bit more about the DA versus the police department later, but essentially his job coming into the DA was to find other theories outside of the Ramseys. What I find really interesting about Lou Smith, and it's something I learned about today, and I wrote it down here, but the reason he was brought in is that Lou Smith is really famous for solving a murder investigation.
Where the parents were expected of killing a child in their home, but it turned out to not be the parents.
Yeah, so he solved the murder of Heather Dawn Church, and this was a very similar case in that, you know, everyone looked at the parents first, and upon finding a single fingerprint, he was able to identify the actual murderer, who was someone outside of the family. So that is, you know, what he's kind of known for. So I don't think it's any, you know, coincidence that he came into this case with that same mindset.
Right. So that's the person they purposefully sought out. Lou Smith was a detective. He had since retired. So he was a former detective, and he was brought on to be a consultant for the case.
Yeah. So when we talk about the intruder theory, we're talking about Lou Smith's theory and the theory that the DA ended up running with. You know, in Stephen Thomas's book, which is one of our favorite catchphrases, obviously, he talks about, you know, meeting Lou Smith for the first time and how he was like his personal hero. And, you know, they went over the case file for like a couple of hours when Lou Smith was like, "I don't think the parents did it." And Steve Thomas was kind of taken aback by that. And he, you know, makes this claim that he feels like before Lou Smith even got to Boulder, Colorado, he had his mind made up because he wanted a second go-ahead at that, like, fame of being able to solve that one case.
Yeah, like breaking the case.
Yeah.
Cracking it wide open.
Yeah, and being kind of like almost like an expert in that idea of study where these seemingly obvious cases actually turn out to be something else. So that's kind of what he was like.
Right. Or, and what he would probably more likely say is that these seemingly obvious cases turn out to be seemingly obvious because to him, it was just quite obviously an intruder.
Right. So I will admit that I think Lindsay and I both have a we had to kind of hold ourselves back in this episode. So we actually wrote out the intruder theory, and we're going to read that first so that we're not interrupting and going on side tangents. And then afterwards, we're going to talk about what works with it and what doesn't.
Days prior to December 26, 1996, the Ramseys held a house tour for the historic Boulder Holiday Home Tour fundraiser. The kidnapper masqueraded as an attendee to scope out the Ramsey home. The house tour allowed them to see an intimate layout of the house, including but not limited to the basement, where the broken window is, showing a perfect point of entry.
On December 25th, 1996, the Ramseys left for a Christmas party at the White's house. Once gone, the intruder broke into their house via the broken window in the basement. In-depth analysis of the outside foliage suggests it is possible the intruder tried to first break into the bathroom window downstairs, but was unsuccessful.
Once into the house, the intruder walked through the house, going through the Ramsey's possessions. The intruder managed to find John's pay stubs outlining his Christmas bonus, which was $118,000. From here, the intruder found a pen and, in a different area, a pad of paper belonging to Patsy Ramsey and began writing the ransom note. Knowing the Ramseys would be away for a while, the true intruder had plenty of time to write multiple drafts of the note. Once complete, the intruder hid in the guest bedroom, knowing the window overlooked the garage, allowing an ideal spot to view when the Ramseys would be home.
When they arrived home, the intruder hid under the bed of the guest room and waited until the Ramseys went to sleep. He then went into JonBenet's bedroom and hit her with a stun gun, knocking her unconscious. He picked her up, walked to the basement, and attempted to put her body in a suitcase found downstairs. However, he failed to fit her into the suitcase.
She then woke up and screamed. This is when he began strangling her with a garrote and assaulting her. Upon her passing, the intruder panicked and set her inside the wine cellar and left through the basement window.
Okay, so that's pretty much the, like, you know, brief overview of what the intruder theory is. So essentially, you know, it's widely believed by Lou Smith and the DA that an intruder broke in through the basement window while the Ramseys were gone, and that is what allowed them to go through the Ramseys' things. And it kind of explains, you know, why the $118,000 in the ransom note, why, you know, they had an intimate knowledge of the house layout, you know, things like that. It's a very convenient theory. However, the problem that I have with the intruder theory is that the only way for it to be possible is if there's a smoking gun that we're missing, which I don't think actually exists.
Well, I think Lou Smith would think the DNA is the smoking gun.
That's a good point. So,
but it's not semen or something that's useful.
Right. And, you know, that's what's kind of hard about the intruder theory is it relies very, very heavily on this controversial DNA sample found in her long johns and her underwear. So, I mean, let's just get into it. I think, you know, the intruder theory started to become popular post-2008 when the Ramseys were cleared by the district attorney. From that point, there have been several documentaries that often have Lou Smith in them showing this idea of an intruder theory. And since then, like, the popularity for this theory has grown immensely. Like, it really, like, flipped the script because, like, you know, prior to this accessible idea of an intruder theory, everyone was kind of thinking it was the Ramseys. Like, the media kind of did. You know, if you asked anyone, they always, like, thought that the Ramseys had something to do with it. But upon these multiple documentaries, you have this new idea that it was an intruder.
The intruder theory is, you know, as you said, post Ramseys being cleared publicly by the DA. Although that went against the recommendation of the person who actually tested the DNA.
Right. And the thing about the intruder theory, and we'll get to it in this episode for sure when we talk about it, is it has to ignore other pieces of evidence, like the pineapple.
And things beyond that, too.
Well, yeah, there,
you know, why is her nightgown in the cellar? You know, like, there's things that it just completely ignores. It's like it takes the evidence it likes and then leaves everything else.
Yeah, Steve Thomas said that the intruder theory feels like a group of detectives and the DA throwing spaghetti at the wall and, like, trying to see which one stuck. You know, like, every time that one theory was debunked from them, they just threw another thing at the wall. And, you know, and he said that with the intruder theory, the case became more of disproving the intruder theory than it was solving the case.
I recently listened to Lou Smith's granddaughter's podcast, and I was actually unimpressed with the evidence that they used, especially since they probably consider themselves to be one of, like, the more serious authorities on this case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that connection at all. Just because you're related to a consultant on the case doesn't make you one of the leading authorities. But you'd think that you would, you know, being maybe perceived that way, you would be more cautious with the evidence that and the way you portray the evidence.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And I want to spend, you know, a good amount of time of this episode discussing what we learned from that podcast. But first, like, let's go through the intruder theory a little bit.
And expanding on that, because there's a lot more that's wrong with the intruder theory than their little, you know, fact or myth, like, or whatever. You know, like, there's a lot more beyond that.
Yeah, and we'll play myth or fact, our own.
Is that what it's called?
Myth or fact, yeah.
Sounds like truth or dare.
What Lindsay's referring to is...
Dip or derp.
I don't think it's... Okay, so what Lindsay's referring to, before we, you know, kind of get more into the intruder theory, is that Lou Smith, he is deceased now, and his family has taken over the case, and his two granddaughters...
Unofficially, the family has unofficially taken over the case.
Unofficially have taken over the case, and his two granddaughters have created a podcast of their own. And in preparation for this episode, we listened to their podcast knowing it would be about the intruder theory.
And we were hoping to be sold on it. We were hoping to be convinced. And we were hoping that it would be compelling and contain information that would bring it all together for us.
Yeah, it did not. And I already, prior to, you know, everything... Prior to this episode, prior to listening to their podcast, I always had reservations about the intruder theory because you literally have to ignore other key pieces of evidence to piece it together. And this is not me saying that there's no way an intruder theory can exist. This is me saying that the intruder theory that we have, the one that is concrete that we have to work with, is really clumsy.
And it's imperfect at best.
Okay, so let's get into it. So the first, you know, big claim is that the intruder broke into the Ramsey's home while they were at the Christmas party and had all of this time to go through their personal belongings and write these notes. And immediately off the gate, I'm going to say, no way. You don't know how long someone's going to be gone.
Right. Well, here's another thing that I found really strange is, okay, so let's say you write this strange note in three drafts, and whatever you did with the drafts, did you flush them, did you eat them? I don't know what a psycho person writing a ransom note would do, but a lot of people believe that the note was written well before the child was dead. However, the FBI forensic linguists that looked at this said that's not the case. And who do you trust to decipher that? An FBI forensic linguist. That's the person who is the outstanding authority on this, not, you know, some retired detective, not even a present detective, you know, not an expert from the Boulder Police Department who, you know, has read many ransom notes. There's also a comment in the podcast where they said the letter has no haste in it. It wasn't written hastily. So they think that it was written before the child died. But they cite no way of proving there was no haste. They don't say, well, because the handwriting was shaky or because it was three pages, or they don't actually cite any reason that there's no haste other than saying six competent experts and not citing them said there was no haste. When in fact, the FBI ruled that the letter was written post-mortem with no intention of a kidnapping ever happening. It's just a red herring.
Well, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, because in my mind, if I'm breaking into someone's house and I don't know how long they're going to be gone, even if the note was written long before her death, that would still feel like someone was writing in a hurry. Because, like, you don't know if you have 3 hours or an hour or 20 minutes. So, like, no matter what the situation is, it feels like, you know, it's impossible that this note wasn't at least a little bit written in a haste, like, to their point. Like, them saying that,
There's no haste present.
Right. Like, well, in their own theory, you would think there'd be plenty of haste. I don't know about you, but I mean, if I broke into a house for any number of reasons, everything I'm going to be doing is going to be very fucking quick.
And cautious.
Extremely cautious. Why would you go to the length of breaking into someone's house, premeditated enough to go to their house tour to figure out a point of entry and not bring a ransom note of your own? Like, you were going to go the ransom note route.
And then you rummage through their things and find a pen over by the phone and a pad of paper over in the office. And
right. I mean, this person brought nothing with them.
Yeah, it's strange. Well, I mean, does that, the person bringing nothing with them other than probably latex gloves so they could handle the note and leave no fingerprints, does that make me think that that means there was no intruder? No. You know, maybe they did want to use their pen. You know, so they didn't leave anything of theirs behind.
Right. Well, like, in it would set up a perfect framing situation. I'm saying that in this context, it doesn't read as enough time.
Well, sometimes the simplest solution is the solution, you know. But
you know, that's funny you say that, because that's one of Lou Smith's, like, favorite sayings, is that it's always the simplest solution, which I find really ironic.
Because it's the most convoluted theory all of them.
Well,
other than maybe the bedwetting theory.
I do want to take a moment to talk about the window thing. So this is used, and I've heard people change their minds about this case due to this idea. And it's used in all the documentaries, is that Lou Smith claims that the way the foliage set in the window is proof of an intruder. So for those listening, let me give you a kind of an idea of what this window we're talking about. This isn't a window that if you pass by a house, you'll see. It's under a metal grate that you have to, like, pick up first and then go into the spot that has the window. So he is suggesting that you can tell someone lifted up the grate by the foliage that was on top of the grate falling into that area where the window is. Here's my problem with this, is that Lou Smith and his granddaughters who did that podcast, the problem I have with it is that there's two big things that happen with this window. One, this, like, idea of foliage falling inside of it, and two, an unbroken spider web that had been attached from the window pane to the grate. So on one hand, Lou Smith puts a lot of emphasis on the foliage and thinks that that alone is enough to prove an intruder theory. However, when speaking about this idea in the granddaughter's podcast, they, you know, went on the huge tangent about the foliage. I guess you can find, like, a leaf or something in the wine cellar, you know, stuff like that. But in the same breath, they said that they ignore the spider web because it's not evidence. So what I mean by that is an unbroken spider web in this well, you would think that if you lifted up a grate, the spider web would break. And I think that that's pretty definitive, honestly. I mean, that's like science and nature right there, but I guess it's not. And this is what we're talking about with the intruder theory, is that in this very same spot, these two forms of evidence exist, and one is being emphasized and one is being completely ignored.
One's evidence and one is not.
Exactly.
And but they're both part of the crime scene.
Exactly. And for me, like, the foliage is way less evidence than the spider web, because the spider web places a timeline. the foliage that could have been from the day before. That could have been a few weeks ago when John forgot his keys in the house and went through the window. Like, there's nothing placing that very specific foliage in there of being completely linked that night, but the spider web does.
Bro, you'd be a great prosecutor.
Oh, really? Isn't that a really good point, though? And then they talk about these, like, so I saw the pictures, which are pretty comical because it's like one little leaf found in the basement. And may I remind everyone that just 3 days prior, they did a home tour. I tracked leaves into my house in the fall too, like, or near, you know, winter time when I'm walking in.
Yeah.
You can't place
snow people.
Right. You can't say that specific leaf found in the basement came from the intruder. How on earth
was the leaf time stamped? So here's another interesting thing. Was the spiderweb not in the way of sliding down the window? I always like saw the picture and I thought that it was in the window where if you were to shimmy on down, it would be in the actual window area.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. So like you have this grate on top and then the window pane is like right here and it goes from the open
bottom of the window,
the bottom of the window pane to the grate.
Mm-hmm. And so, was it on CBS, that documentary that was ended so abruptly due to a lawsuit, wasn't it there that they actually proved if you were to come down the window that you would hit the spider web?
Oh, absolutely.
It would be detached.
There's no way. This was a pretty big cobweb. And, you know, this is something that
it was in the way.
It was completely in the way. And I'm glad you brought up the CBS thing, because what Lindsay's talking about here, and this is another reason I have a problem with the intruder theory, is that if there is a documentary, and it's usually on ABC, that outlines the intruder theory, it'll get a bunch of like press and attention. And any documentaries that go against that idea have usually been sued out of production.
Yeah, it doesn't go with the narrative.
Right. And, you know, I've heard some people argue that the Ramseys have every right to, you know, sue documentaries that besmirch their name or like investigate it. Personally, at this point, I wish investigators would just investigate this case without cameras. And like, why Lou Smith feels the need to like be in all these documentaries is beyond me if it's not to like push this narrative, and why other people want to do these documentaries. Like, do a documentary after you do an investigation. Like, solve the case and then do a documentary. It'll be the most popular documentary on the planet. But like, at this point, I just want the truth, and like, all the politics surrounding this case just drives me up the wall.
Well, according to one person who commented on our ad, not the one that said, fuck you, not him, the one who said, dude, this case is 30 years old, nobody cares anymore.
I care.
I don't think it'd be the most popular documentary in the world. But I do know from Stephen Thomas's book, which I actually have a t-shirt with that catchphrase on it. And I'm hoping to plug. No, I'm just kidding. But he says that actually bothered Lou Smith. And he was investigating how active would spiders be in the winter, which the answer is not at all.
No.
And he was actually looking at, okay, so since, you know, spider webs can't contain fibrinogen, which is an extremely adhesive compound, would it be able to reattach itself? You know, so he was looking at all this stuff to fit his theory. Like, that was a legitimate thing. And this was actually the mitigating factor when the grand jury indicted the family. They said that's one of the two things they could not get past,
right,
was the spider web, because it's definitive physical evidence.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, when I listened to their podcast, you know, his granddaughters, when they said that the spider web is not evidence, so they're just not going to talk about it. Like, they literally say verbatim, like, it's not evidence, we're not going to discuss it. I was floored. I was like, you know, I understand it's speculative, I guess, but like, that's something to still extrapolate on.
Explain it. Say, you know, it's possible that the furry back wooden Colorado spider, which inhabits Denver and is active during the winter, like, try to explain it.
Right. like, give us something here. So, like, the next thing I want to talk about, and it's probably one of my least favorite topics of this case, is the stun gun. So, the stun gun theory came directly from Lou Smith. Investigators had no reason to believe that a stun gun existed, but essentially, Lou Smith looked at pictures of the autopsy and saw that John Binet had two lesions. Are they lesions or abrasions? Like, what's the correct terminology there?
I believe in the autopsy it says lesions.
Okay.
So it doesn't say burns, because you can actually distinguish between a burn and a lesion on, you know, pre-mortem or post-mortem. You can actually tell them apart and when they occurred.
Right. So Lou Smith had talked to the coroner and been like, is it possible that these are from the stun gun? A stun gun. They're two parallel, like, circular or rectangular lesions on her back. And the coroner said, you know, I don't have the body in front of me, and that's not something we were looking for in the autopsy. This is a completely new idea. So, like, maybe, I don't know. And Lou Smith took that to mean it can't be disproven, therefore it most likely is true. The problem with this idea of a stun gun is that, one, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, investigators looked into this idea of a stun gun, and first of all, like Lindsay said, like, they would have been burn marks. They wouldn't have been lesions or abrasions. They also, from what I understand from reading Steve Thomas's book, is that the two marks on her skin weren't fresh. Like, they were recently new, but not, like, super fresh to, you know, imply that it happened within, you know, an hour or two before her death. But there's, you know, an abundance of evidence that claim that there is no way there was a stun gun.
Do you have any information by Cyril Wecht on the stun gun or the abrasions even?
Oh, Cyril Wecht said that he thinks that the marks are completely congruent with the train tracks.
And would you go ahead and just state Cyril Wecht's qualifications for everybody?
Yes. Cyril Wecht is an extremely famous medical examiner. He has viewed hundreds of autopsies. He's even pretty well known in the autopsy community of, like, doing celebrity autopsies. So, like, he discusses, like, you know,
high different profile.
Oh, yeah. Extremely high profile. And this guy's a genius. And he says that upon looking at the autopsy and in the pictures and things like that, that the two marks on her back were more congruent with an item being pushed into her skin on accident. So, like, what he's referring to here is Burke had a train room downstairs and they had train tracks, and Cyril Wecht and the CBS documentary both claim this, that the marks on her skin perfectly match up with the train tracks. So at any point, she could have laid on one.
He could have prodded her with one at some point, whether that was near her death time or, you know, a day before, who knows. But when I first heard that there was a stun gun, I've never been stunned with a stun gun. I have a taser, and my friend asked me to use it on him, and it seemed uncomfortable. He actually yelled. So, yeah, you know, doesn't seem like something that would subdue someone. However, JC Dugard was abducted with a stun gun. Someone, you know, shocked her with a stun gun and then abducted her and then held her hostage for years. Luckily, she, was able to return home, but, you know, that is something that has been used to subdue people. She did not scream. I remember reading her saying that she tried to scream, but she couldn't. And it was like her whole body was electrocuted.
Yeah. Well, I imagine on a child too, it probably has different.
Right. It's probably much more overwhelming.
So here's my issue with the stun gun. One, I just think it's ridiculous. But two, I 100% believe that someone can be, a small child can be subdued with the stun gun, like their body going into shock and stuff. But here's what I gathered from it. So upon listening to Lou Smith's granddaughter's podcast, they discuss two different things. They say, one, she was subdued with the stun gun, putting her unconscious. But in the next few sentences, and this is something Lou Smith claims, there was a neighbor across the street that claimed she heard a child scream, like, badly. I mean, loud enough to, you know, hear it. And Lou Smith and his granddaughters have always stated that, oh, yeah, like, they heard a scream, but, you know, the Ramseys didn't hear the scream because of X, Y, and Z. But all I can think of is, wait a second, I thought she was unconscious from a stun gun, but now she's screaming so loud that a person neighbors across the street heard her.
That's crazy.
I mean, even waking up from being passed out, I don't think you could just, like, have a blood-curdling scream, like, immediately.
I think if you were in a basement as a fucking six-year-old, I think you might be able to muster something quite impressive.
From being unconscious, though?
Yes. Yeah, I do think so. That's just my opinion, though. We're just speculating, like, you know.
Well, how much time had gone by then? Because, like, that's the problem with that, too, is that, like, in one second she's unconscious, the other second she's screaming bloody murder. How much time between those two things happened?
Well, the spider web's not evidence. The scream is not evidence. So.
Right.
No, okay. The house was actually a rickety old damn house. Stephen Thomas says, you know, they went in there because they thought it was really peculiar that the family didn't hear the scream. And, you know, I don't want to slander anybody, but allegedly Patsy Ramsey did take pills sometimes, and she might have been using a sleeping pill or something. Who knows? And that would be a perfectly possible reason to not hear your child screaming for their life. But, I mean, like, how horrible and sad, but Stephen Thomas, you know, that just didn't sit well with him. Like, how could you not hear your child screaming, you know, moments before their death? So they went into the house at night, you know, to get an idea of how quiet would the neighborhood be, how quiet would the house be. And they said, you can hear every freaking creak every time someone walks on a stair, any room they're in, any talking. They said it is very transparent, which is not what was said in the podcast. They said they did a whole, may I put in, like, false quote scientific experiment where they were yelling and they could not hear each other. Do you want to summarize that one, or I just freshly listened to it.
I mean, that's the thing I wrestle with when it comes to Lou Smith and his theories, because my biggest fear with Lou Smith is that his intentions weren't to solve the case, but rather debunk ideas that the Ramseys didn't do it. And this is a perfect example from it, because, you know, in the podcast, they talk about this experience that Lou Smith did where he went into, you know, the Ramseys' bedroom and had people yelling, but what he failed, and he said
Sorry,
that
he was in the bedroom listening to people yell from the basement.
Right. Yes. Yes. And, you know, saying that he couldn't hear anything. But what he failed to discuss, and this is what's talked about in Steve Thomas's book, is that Steve Thomas was there that night that they did this experiment. And Steve Thomas says that you hear everything. In fact, he and Lou Smith got into an argument in the Ramseys' bedroom because Steve Thomas was like, we can literally hear everything. Like, we can hear footsteps. We can hear the yelling. We can hear the talking. Like, we can hear everything. Like, how are you still holding on to this intruder theory? And Lou Smith was like, I mean, I can hear things, but not very clearly. And those are two very different accounts. Like, on one hand, you have Steve Thomas, along with seven other investigators, saying that they could hear everything going on in this house. But at the same time, you have these podcasts and these documentaries that claim that Lou Smith did this experiment and could hear nothing. Like, why the discrepancy? I mean, he even got into an argument with one of the investigators who were actually on the case, who said, we can hear everything.
Yeah, I know if this was conducted now, they would do it more scientifically, because, you know, I think there was a lot of, like, gut feeling detectivisms, you know. I think now they would actually, like, use a recorder and they'd say, you know, this is within the certain level of decibels that the human ear can conceive, you know.
That's a good point, yeah.
So, sorry, perceive, not conceive. But I think they are both, you know, struggling with confirmation bias, which I know that is, but for our viewers, what it is where you have a bias that when you see something presented to you, you can only accept things that confirm your preconceived notion or your idea. So in this case, when, you know, Lou Smith is in a situation, he's looking for things that confirm his theory, and he very easily dismisses anything that confronts his theory instead of, you know, working through the cognitive dissonance. And the same case with Stephen Thomas as well, who actually mentions that he worries that, you know, sometimes he may be biased and he tries to be extremely impartial. But I mean, I think, you know, I lived in an old rickety house, and you do get used to the sounds. Like, we had the most rickety ass stairs, like ree, ree, ree. I wouldn't hear them at night. So is it possible that someone broke in and ree, 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 all the way up the stairs or downstairs with the kid? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but to not hear, like, a child scream.
Now, that's where it gets weird. Now, if I heard, like, someone scream in my house, would I hear it? I'm a light sleeper, yeah. I'm also not on, you know, pills to go to sleep, you know, so... No, allegedly.
So, one thing I do want to talk about is that, you know, Lou Smith's theory that the kidnapper was going to put JonBenet into the suitcase, he says it's backed up by the fact that there were fibers from the duvet that was inside the suitcase, like, on her body. So, I needed to fact check that. I even, like, wrote a note to be like, look up this idea. And I looked everywhere, and I've explained this before when looking up Lou Smith theories. You can never seem to find the confirmation on them. Is that I couldn't find a single confirmation of that at all. And we'll talk about this in the next episode more when we talk about the Ramses and the theories surrounding them. But the only fibers that were found on JonBenet's body that I could find belonged to Patsy Ramsey's jacket that she was wearing that night.
And you do know that they did not surrender their clothes to the police until about, was it 6 months or four months?
Yeah, and they never got the boots that they wanted. So there was unidentified animal hair on JonBenet.
With the fur!
The whole club was looking at her.
We're going to get claimed now.
She hit the fur.
So they thought that the hair came from beaver fur, from Patsy's beaver fur boots.
I'm glad we're talking about her boots.
Because guess what? They we don't know where they are.
Well, yeah, of course.
And there was, you know, obviously the red fibers from her Christmas sweater that they got several months later, and they were not even convinced that that was the one she was wearing that night. And if it was, it was laundered. Right. But anyway, moving on from that. So, you know, I don't know if you want to play...
Myth or fact. So, Lindsay and I decided to do this game to kind of counter the narrative that was being put forward by the other podcast. Mostly, and the reason we're doing this is because one of the issues we had listening to the other podcast was that they were stating things that belonged in categories of either a myth or a fact, but the things that they were stating could in no way be a fact. So, we are going to play this game and... do myth, fact, or we don't know to counter, you know, the myth and fact game that they were playing. So let me pull it up. All right, ready, Lindsay?
I'm ready.
So for the first one, that they said that this was a myth. So myth, fact, or we don't know. Patsy Ramsey was the author of the ransom note.
Myth! It's actually we don't know. So, why?
So the ransom note is another thing that makes the intruder theory seem weird. And a lot, and the reason for that is that multiple handwriting experts, including the six people panel of experts that they talk about, they said that they can't rule Patsy out. But because they said they can't rule Patsy out, the Lou Smith and his family seem to think that that means that no, she did not write it. And so they you know, maybe
because they didn't say she did definitively write it, because that's not how handwriting analysis works. That's like expecting, you know, us to measure time in colors. Like, you don't do that. Like, you measure time in seconds and minutes, you know. So with something like this, we're not measuring handwriting analysis as a thumbs up or thumbs down, yes or no, guilty or innocent. We're measuring it on a spectrum of can be conclusively ruled out, cannot be conclusively ruled out. And for, you know, let the record show that a lot of people were conclusively ruled out.
Oh, everyone was, except for Chris Wolf and Patsy Ramsey.
Wow.
So, you know, that is something we both, like, took issue with. Is you can't claim that she wasn't definitively the author of the note, because no expert on the planet is going to say that anyone is definitively their handwriting.
Because that's not how they communicate about their work.
Right. Like, that's not how handwriting
analysis
works.
Any work that they do on handwriting analysis, they do not communicate that way, because that is wrong and unprofessional and negligent.
Okay, so myth or fact, the ransom note was written after the murder. Oh, wait. Myth, fact, or we don't know. The ransom note was written after the murder.
We don't know.
We don't know. That's the most struggling thing about this case. Lindsay and I and other podcasters out there, we can only theorize
and speculate.
So the reason why we're doing this myth or fact game right now is that this other podcast claims that these things are either not true or true, and we're here to emphasize that there's not much in this case that's true or false. A lot of it we just don't know,
or it's up for interpretation.
Right, it's up for interpretation. Common sense, like, and you know what experts have said or what people theorize. But when we talk about these two different camps of like the investigators versus the DA, like, this is the myth and fact that we're talking about, when the reality is we just don't know. All right. This wasn't one of their myth or fact things, but I'm going to go ahead and use this one instead. So Lindsay, myth, fact, or we don't know. The high-tech footprint in the basement is from the intruder.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm gonna say myth.
I am also gonna say myth. So one of the things about the intruder theory, it relies heavily on the high-tech boot prints. Now, we can't say definitively if it's in relation to the murder. What we can say definitively, and this is something that Lou Smith and that podcast has ignored, is that Burke Ramsey did own high-tech boots. And both claim, so Lou Smith and his granddaughter.
How do you know he owned high-tech boots? Is it because you saw a picture of him wearing high-tech boots and a picture with his family? Yeah. How else do you know?
I'll get there. Relax. The reason we're bringing this up is because in, you know, pursuit of truth here and understanding this case, Lou Smith and his granddaughters claim that no members of the Ramsey family had high-tech boots, and that is a false claim. The reasoning for this is, one, allegedly that there is a picture of him with his family where he's wearing high-tech boots. I can't tell if they're high-tech boots, but the bigger thing is that Fleet White Jr., so Fleet White, you know, friends of John Ramsey, his son has said that Burke Ramsey had high-tech boots. But then what's more is that the grand jury that took place, we don't know much about it, but Burke Ramsey said at the grand jury that he owned high-tech boots.
Now, does that mean that he's implicated in the murder? No.
No,
it means he wore his boots in his house at some point.
Exactly. So this idea of like chasing down this, you know, Cinderella story with this like high-tech boot, like going door to door and being like,
well, here's the most horrible thing boots. Is like, you know, like, let's say you get a shoe that say Skechers, you know, on them. By the way, this is not sponsored by Skechers, in case you're wondering. You know how, but I know Skechers will say Skechers on the bottom.
Right.
And then you like walk in the mud and it says Skechers. But what they have is they just have the print that says high tech and some like name, like little imprints around it. They don't have a freaking size. It could be a size for boys, or it could be a size 14 men's, you know, like they have no idea what size it is. So even if they were to match it to a boot, they can't match it to a particular boot because there's no freaking size.
Right. So when it comes to, you know, crucial evidence in this case, to me, even the fact that the Ramseys had so many people in their basement a few days before, and knowing that Burke Ramsey has high-tech boots, you're never going to find the murderer by this high-tech boot print. So, moving on, and I think this is probably the last point we're going to make about the intruder theory, is that you know it has to be the pineapple, right? Because so we read off the intruder theory as laid out by Lou Smith, and nowhere in that timeline is there the consumption of pineapple. And as we've talked about, she had pineapple, undigested pineapple in her stomach via the autopsy. And as we've talked about before, the existence of pineapple in her stomach disproves a lot of theories. And for me, it definitely excludes, like, the intruder theory.
Well, I think, you know, maybe it was, you know, the guy's fetish to feed the child pineapple. I mean, there's a way you can weasel it in if you really try. But what I will say is they go ahead and quote the vice president of the Trisomy 21 Research Foundation when they're speaking about...
Wait, who's they?
Sorry. Should I start that over?
Go ahead.
Well, when I say they, I mean the podcast that Lou Smith's granddaughters run. They quote the vice president of the Trisomy 21 Research Foundation. And as soon as they said that, a red flag went up because they didn't say, you know, any type of digestive related research institution. They said Trisomy 21, which I instantly know is Down syndrome. So it's they're quoting someone from a Down syndrome research foundation. I'm not saying that, you know, they're not qualified. They also didn't say if they were a doctor or not, who would know a lot more about one of the words they throw in there is peristalsis, which is a stomach process where your stomach makes like these rings and moves the food back and forth to slush it into a like unison pile because it's going to digest it.
Right.
So did you notice that I said they mixes everything together?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So if she was to, they use the word cellulose, which is actually a undigestible starch that you find in plants. And that's why, you know, things like fiber goes right through you because it's undigestible. So cellulose is like you'd find it in bark, you'd find it in certain fruits. If you ate like a banana peel, I'm pretty sure it's in that. Right. But it's also present in citrus fruits. Like if you eat the orange peel or little, you know, the gross stuff outside the orange, and including pineapple. They kind of cast doubt on whether or not there was even pineapple in her stomach at all.
Okay, so that's the part that blew me away more than anything. And I think that's when I called you and left you that voicemail. But yeah, let's talk about that. So in listening to, in the podcast is called The Victim's Shoes, and it's by, you know, the granddaughters of Lou Smith. They, in order for the intruder theory to work, they just claim that the pineapple didn't exist.
Right. And the thing is I wrote down some notes on this. They said that the pineapple could have been eaten 6 to 8 hours before her death. It could have been eaten at the White's Christmas party or before. I just wrote no, because the White said they did not have pineapple. They didn't say that several months after, because unlike the Ramseys, they actually were formally interviewed by the police. They said very soon, we know exactly what we served at Christmas, and there was no fruit cocktail and there was no pineapple. And so she did not consume that at the White's Christmas party. And then it says, or before. No, because not only would that be impossible for her to withhold that, despite them saying that cellulose slows your digestive processes, even if that's true, anything else she ate would be mixed in there. I don't think the person talking about this has any type of medical training. I do have a biology degree, and I'm getting a master's from a school of medicine. So I know some basic things about digestion, and your body isn't going to pick things that it wants out of your stomach. Like, that's not your stomach's job. Your stomach's job is to mix everything together. And the autopsy flat out says it's undigested pineapple. It's yellow. Even to the point where they say in the autopsy, they think it's pineapple. Like,
right. And that's, so this is something that's really important for like anyone listening to understand, that when you're hearing these informations about this case, don't just, you know, hear these ideas of facts of being brought out, because in this podcast that we're referring to, they say at one point that it states nowhere that it's pineapple.
Like, but we read the autopsy to you guys. We read it.
We read the autopsy. So like, you know, when you're hearing things like this, and you need to think like critically, whether you believe in the intruder theory or not, whether you believe in Lou Smith's theories or not, like that's totally 100%. I still think the intruder theory can be viable, just not in this way.
I don't think ignoring evidence is the way to make the intruder theory work.
Exactly. So that's the part I have a problem with the intruder theory, is that essentially anything that goes against the main theory of the Ramseys, they just push off to the side. They don't disprove it because they can't. So instead, they push it out of the way to make it seem unimportant. And they say these flashy things like, oh, it says nowhere that there was pineapple in her stomach, you know, assuming that the average listener is not going to read an autopsy. So we read the autopsy to you, and I have a couple quotes for you as well. So Stephen Thomas says, our experts, and this is a verbatim quote, our experts studied the pineapple on the stomach and reported that it was fresh cut pineapple consistent down to the rind with what had been found in the Ramsey's bowl. So the actual autopsy report says the proximal portion of the small intestine contains fragmented pieces of yellow to green apparent vegetable or fruit material, and then in parentheses says fragments of pineapple. And then coroner Dr. John Meyer, giving his opinion, said JonBenet Ramsey had consumed raw pineapple not long before her death. So right there, we have three different sources that all, they don't just say fruit, they say pineapple. Like,
very, well, that also goes pineapple. To show is you can't just take what anyone says about at face value. We're from a different generation than, you know, I don't know how, what the age of the people doing the podcast, Lou Smith's granddaughters doing the podcast are, but I do know that the older generation, when someone told you something, it was, they tried, you know, to tell you things that they believed were true.
Right.
We have the internet, so we can actually verify whether things are true or not. So when you hear there's no pineapple in her stomach, Google it. When you hear peristalsis and you don't know what that is, Google it.
Google what we're saying too. Like, double check everything. Cause like, that's like what I've had to do a lot with this case, because you will see and hear and read different accounts everywhere. So when I listened to their podcast earlier, and they talked about duvet fibers found on her body, I was like, I'd never even heard of that before. I Googled it. I looked everywhere, much like everything else I Google with Lou Smith. It doesn't exist anywhere. But you know, I hope that the audience fact checks us too. You know, we make mistakes, like, and who knows? Maybe we're lying too. Just fact check everything.
Yeah, I got the Patsy Ramsey's fingerprints on the ransom note thing wrong.
Yeah, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I finally got to that part of the book, and you were confusing it with the pad of paper. So
the legal pad.
Yeah, the legal pad that the note was written on, the only fingerprints on the legal pad were Patsy Ramsey's. And something that we're going to get into a little bit more next time when we talk about the theories involving the Ramseys is that John had told Steve Smith, or Stephen Thomas. Why did I say Steve Smith? That's my ex-boss. Hi, Steve. Hope you're listening, man. He had told Stephen Thomas that they read the note and he moved the note. So he, you know, touched the note, and he said that they both touched it, but there were no fingerprints from them, which I think is strange. But Lou Smith would probably just claim that they were wearing their famous sleeping mittens.
Or they bent over and looked at it.
Right. And they touched it.
What is this?
They moved it by just blowing it in the air, you know, you know, and well, blowing, you know, the paper away.
When the Grinch like leans over to like hear the Who's singing or crying on Christmas Day, you know what I'm talking about? When he's at the top of the mountain, he like bends over. That's how I picture them reading the ransom note, is like all bent over, like really stretched out and like cartoonish.
I mean, obviously.
Before we put the pineapple to bed, I do want to clarify when I said it couldn't have been before the Ramses left for the White's party that she consumed the pineapple, is not only because peristalsis literally mixes everything together and then digests it together. It's actually because the Ramses said they did not feed her pineapple beforehand and they did not feed her pineapple afterwards. But there was a bowl of pineapple sitting on the counter. And there's this saying by J.C. Peters where he says, when you hear hoofbeats in Central Park, think horses, not zebras. Is it possible that an intruder came in and fantasized about, you know, feeding a child pineapple, then, you know, subduing her, putting her in a suitcase and chose to strangle her? Yes. Or is it more likely that she ate the pineapple that's on the table?
Right. To use Lou Smith's own knowledge, like his own saying, you know, if something simple, like, it's often, what is it? I don't know the exact phrase he uses, but it's along the lines of, like, usually it's the simplest answer. And I'm sorry, but nothing about this intruder theory is the simple answer at all.
That's, yeah, that's one of the things I struggle with this theory. I think it's hard for me to piece it together realistically for someone to be so calculated and premeditated, but at the same time be, like, the most clumsy idiot.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, don't understand. Yeah. Like, are they a criminal mastermind, or are they, like, a fucking idiot? Like, I don't, like, can you be both at the same time?
Well, and, you know, like, that's what I always say, is that in order for the intruder theory to work, you have to have the stealthiest, clumsiest kidnapper on the planet. Because this person was stealthy enough and smart enough to go through an already broken window that is hidden by a metal grate. And using only materials found in the household, not only for the ransom note, but for the murder weapon as well.
And transporting her. Wasn't that their suitcase?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all crazy.
But one thing I learned from the podcast, I don't know, I didn't have a chance to verify it because I was just listening to it. I'm on their last episode, which they really don't have very many. Yeah. I actually planned on listening to their podcast before we started doing this podcast. It was in my Spotify. I just hadn't listened to it yet because I was listening to other things.
Right.
But it's Mr. Stanton, which is their neighbor, said that he heard a slamming of the grate.
Right.
Now, I'd never heard anything of that before. I know that his wife is the one who said she heard the scream.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when did he hear it? Did he hear that grate really early? Did he hear it before she heard the scream?
I don't know too much about this part, and it's not something that I'm ignoring by any means. I do know that both him and his wife, so like the woman who heard the scream and the guy who said that they heard a metal crate, both retracted their statements later.
I wonder if that had anything to do with something besides the interest of justice.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
I'm just highly speculating, allegedly.
I don't know. I do know that they retracted their statements and they couldn't get further statements from them. Because if you remember, Stephen Thomas talks about how he wanted to go across the street and talk with them, but the Ramses lawyer wouldn't let him. Also, just a quick update for everyone. I'm so excited about this. Lynn Wood, one of the Ramsey lawyers, more recent lawyer. I don't know about like during this time, but definitely the most recent lawyer in these defamation cases is under investigation for voter fraud right now. I just had to put that in because it's very interesting. But anyways, but one of the lawyers stopped Stephen Thomas from being able to get further remarks from them. So all we know is that we heard this one time exactly and police weren't allowed to follow up with it. So that's why, you know, the hearing the scream and the grate, like, it's impossible to know.
So it's not that it's not evidence, it's just it's not verifiable evidence.
Right. It was never able to be verified, and both of them retracted their statement, which, from what I understand, when witnesses or anything like that retract their statements, the police have to kind of, like, pretend they never heard it, essentially. Yeah, so that's why I don't have much to say about it, because there's not much to say, because we don't know the follow-up on that at all. Mm-hmm. Man, I really needed to get this episode out of my system. I've been obsessing over this for the past like 5 days.
I just still feel like there's so much more we could say. We also left out the fact that the Smith family theory involves the intruder hiding under the bed, which is possible, versus under the guest bed. That's so fucking terrifying to me. Like,
okay, but the thing I find comical about that, so they claim that
you can find something comical about a murderer hiding under a six-year-old's bed.
I can find something comical about that claim because it's absolutely unfounded, because the reasoning, and this is another claim that they say is definitive proof, like you can't, they claim that you just can't even like argue it. They claim, so the idea that someone hid in the guest bedroom under the bed came from crime scene photos that showed the, what is it, bed cover? What is the thing that covers?
Oh, the dust ruffle.
The dust ruffle was askewed a little bit, and it shows that there could have been a sign of distress, as in someone like going under the bed, like back and forth under the bed. I saw the picture and I'm just like, oh, you're just, you're really grasping at straws. I mean, like, that's, I mean, if that's the best proof you got, like, I don't even know if that can be truly considered.
Subjective.
Oh, it's completely subjective. I, too, can look at a picture of anything and suggest things about it. I mean, but there's no, you know, it would just be so different if they said that they found, like, hair that belonged to a disgruntled employee and hadn't been there for a while, or sperm, or
from some weirdo hiding under her bed,
blood, or spit, like anything, but just the
Capri Sun that was drunk by him,
right? And all he's really saying is the major
a can of pineapple that's empty,
right? No, instead of like, you know, the maid doesn't make the bed nice one
you
day,
know, they actually, so in that podcast, they also discounted the bedwetting theory just because the bed wasn't wet. Now, I don't know if anyone's ever had a bedwetter in the family.
I'm gonna like stop you right here, because otherwise we're both gonna go on a long tangent that needs to be saved for next time, because next time we're gonna be discussing the bedwetting theory and the pineapple theory and, you know, the sex game theory. So
wait, we're doing all three? It's a 3-for-1?
It's a 3-for-1.
That's gonna be like an hour and a half.
I mean, it's gonna be a long episode. We might have to do a 2-parter, but either way, we're gonna talk about this podcast more during these theory episodes.
Because they are the proponents of they are the largest proponents of the intruder theory. It was basically designed by former detective Lou Smith.
Yeah, 1,000%. That's the whole reason he was brought on. And that's not me speculating. Like, the DEA told the investigators they were bringing him on to get like the idea of an intruder going.
A special perspective.
Well, they told the investigators that they specifically wanted to look into an intruder theory more, and he was the perfect, you know, person to do that. So they literally brought him in for the purpose of an intruder theory.
So in a way, he's the intruder on the investigation.
Oh. He went into the broken window of the justice system.
Wow. Like, you had that one ready, dude.
I have a lot of feelings about the intruder theory. So yeah, get ready for the next episode, because... Okay.
I thought you were talking to me. I was like, okay. I forgot to get ready.
Lindsay's the biggest fan of this podcast.
I'm probably the only fan. No reference to OnlyFans.
Right.
But it's fine.
So anyone listening, please subscribe, like, share. Get really excited for the next episode, where we will talk about the three main theories surrounding the Ramsey family, including the bedwetting theory, the sex game theory, and the pineapple theory. And then we will continue bitching about the other podcast.
You realize we haven't even said the name of the podcast still.
I said it. I said The Victim's Shoes.
Oh. Can I buy these shoes?
For my mama, please.
I hate that song.
I know. It's Christmas Eve and these shoes.
Okay. Wait, are you singing us off?
Oh, I can sing us off. Ooh, can I rap us off? Let me think. Wait.
I feel like this is going to get cut, but okay.
I can think of a song. Hold on. Give me a Beatles song. A simple one, though. Don't get weird with it.
Hey, Jude.
Okay. Ooh, ooh, I got it. Hey, Lou. Stop with these sad theories. You're retired and no one asked you.
It's not true. Someone asked him.
I know, but it went with it.
Remember.
The FOIA stupid evidence. And you ignored.
The spider webs.
Hey.
Spider.
All right. Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening.